It's time to Talk It Over, starring Diane Diamond, Lee J. Berman, and Louise Palanker. Give us a call at 888-531-7171. Email us at talkitover@gmail.com. Join us online at talkitoverradio.com. Because we're ready to talk it over.
Welcome to Talk It Over, the show about conflict and resolution and all of that juicy stuff that happens in between in Los Angeles. I'm Louise Palanker. And with me, as always in the studio West Coast, is our professional mediation superstar, Lee J. Berman. How are you doing, Lee J.?
I'm great, Wheezy. How are you doing?
Excellent. All right. On the East Coast, we have reporting journalistic phenom, Diane Diamond. Hello, Diane.
Hey, everybody. Ready to solve some conflicts.
Oh, well, that's why we're here.
Yeah.
Let's do it. What do we got? What's going on in the news, Diane?
Well, you know, I've been watching lately all of these celebrities and their personal problems in the news, and I'm wondering, how do they do it? For example, you know, the guy who plays Batman, Christian Bale, He's ready for his big premiere. Batman is coming out. He is Batman. And what happens? His sister and his mother charge him with assault. I mean, how embarrassing is that? And then the other actor that I noticed was in the news is that guy who's on Brothers and Sisters, Balthazar Getty.
Ooh, cute.
He's... Yeah. Oh, isn't he a doll? Oh, my God. Well, he's a cheater. He's a big, fat cheater on the show.
So I have a chance?
And he's a big, fat cheater in real life, too. Apparently, he's caught in Positano, Italy, canoodling.
Tabloidy word I love.
He's canoodling.
No one actually canoodles unless they canoodle in a tabloid.
Of course. He was canoodling with actress Sienna Miller, who just happened to be topless.
Which one
during
is she?
This canoodling session.
Am I supposed to know which one she is?
She's a blonde, young, I don't know, she's 25, he's 33. And, you know, the good, healthy activity, go for it. However, He's married and he's got four kids.
Yeah, are you asking me to gossip about this when we're talking about other people gossiping? I don't want to weigh in. I don't know.
No, I'm not asking you to gossip. I'm saying I wonder how they do it. How do they talk it over with their family members and solve these problems? Mother's sister assault charges, your wife who's mad because you were canoodling when the whole wide world is watching.
I don't
Ouch.
Think there's a Hallmark section that covers this.
No. Mm-mm.
Mm-mm. While you were away.
You know, if you think about it, it must take an amazing amount of guts to cheat on a marriage to start with. But then imagine, and that's the wrong word, guts, but I'm going somewhere here. Imagine knowing
balls.
That they, imagine knowing that the paparazzi are following you, that you're now famous, that the girlfriend that you have that you're allegedly cheating with or apparently cheating with is also famous, and that there are cameras behind every bush everywhere you go.
Yeah.
Imagine what it takes, even knowing that, to think that you're going to get away with this. I don't think that's possible. I think somebody wanted to get caught. I think somebody said, you know, my wife and four kids, I don't know how to tell you this, but I've really got this crush on this other girl. So rather than sit down and talk it over with you, I'm going to let the tabloid snap a photo.
Yeah,
I'm going to canoodle on camera.
My canoodling session.
Exactly. And I think it's the chicken's way out, frankly. I think
very much so.
He knew what was going to happen. I'm just speculating here, but I think that's a chicken's way to not talk it over when you've got bad news to deliver.
I do agree that it's some like a police-assisted suicide in a way. But I also think that I'm of the school that Sally Field can solve every problem.
Right. And I think she would just talk it over.
Exactly.
Balthazar would just talk it over with Sally.
With his TV mom, she'll know what to do.
Yeah.
I mean, look how she helped Forrest.
At Forrest Gump.
Sure.
Yes. Life is like a box of chocolate.
Sure.
But still, toss out question here. How do you talk it over with a family member when, say, the whole neighborhood has heard you arguing, has seen you out in front of the house spanking your child, or, you know, having a fight with your mother-in-law? Doesn't that really make for a really toxic situation, Lee J?
It does. It does. And to answer your question, the way you talk it over is very transparently. You have to be very transparent and clean, and you have to fess up to what you've done, and you've got to own it. because that's the first thing that's on everybody's mind is, we saw you spanking your kid in the front yard. We saw you canoodling with this actress on a beach in Italy somewhere. We saw what's going on here. We all know you can't have any credibility with them in talking anything over until you take ownership of what you've done. And you step up and say, I blew it, but we still have an issue. Now, can we talk about that? Wheezy's great when she describes how to do an apology. Why don't you talk about the components of apology for a minute? Because I think that's critical, too.
Well, you don't just say, I'm sorry, and you don't say, I'm sorry you feel that way.
My husband says that. Don't get me started. Go ahead.
You have to say, I would like to ask for your forgiveness.
Yeah.
Because an apology is only an apology if it is completely deferential, in that what I'm saying to you is, this is about me asking you for forgiveness. This isn't about me relieving my own guilt and spilling it upon you. This is about me coming to you and saying, I would like to have your forgiveness. May I have that? Will you offer that to me?
It's the only way. Most people think they're done as soon as they say, I'm sorry. And too often they're saying, I'm sorry, okay? Like that.
Yeah.
And it's just so insincere. Or, you get the person who says, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, and never means it, but just really means, be quiet. Stop talking at me. I don't want to be faced with what I did. Yeah. Can we move on? And I think you've got to ask for forgiveness, and you've got to wait for an answer. Mm-hmm. And then you can talk it over, because then at least you've earned some of your old credibility back.
Well, I don't think we can move forward until we acknowledge what is. We have to acknowledge and accept where we are before we can move to another spot. Otherwise, we're just flailing about.
Absolutely.
It's the first step of recovery is to say, I am Jim. If your name's Jim, you say that. And that's the perfect example of acknowledging. This is where I am. Here's where I need to go. Just, I didn't do it. I wasn't there. I didn't see him. I don't know. I didn't call her. She didn't call me. I don't know. Whatever.
And like Lee J says, so many times people, instead of saying, you know what? I am truly, honestly, I am so sorry. They give you that, rolling of the eyes, and I'm sorry, okay?
Yeah.
And you just want to slap them. So I like what you said, Louise, too. It's not just saying I'm sorry. It's really looking into someone's eyes and saying, can you forgive me? Because mm-hmm. then what right person in their right mind would say no? So anyway, good advice.
All right. Well, Matt, what's going on? Who's on the phones?
On the Talk It Over international line, we've mm-hmm. got Philip. Hello, Philip.
Hi, Matt. Hi, Louise. Hi, Lee. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Philip.
Hi, everybody.
Thanks for calling Talk It Over. What's going on? What's going on with you?
Oh, having some personal issues with a close family member who, after a long sort of a long time, has come to terms that they might have some issues with their mood swings and their general interactions with other people, and I started to try and go into therapy, or some kind of therapy after being diagnosed, but having a hard time going. I think getting up the gumption or the guts to go. I don't know quite what the issue is, so perhaps I've never had any experience with it. So I was hoping that maybe I could have some tips to help them out.
Philip, it's Lee J. First of all, where are you calling us from?
The UK.
Ah, wonderful. We're in the UK.
Just outside of London.
Ah, wonderful. Well, thank you for calling Talk It Over. So let me ask a quick question. What was the diagnosis? You said she was diagnosed.
Well, she wasn't able to get a full diagnosis because she refused mm-hmm. to go to a specialist. The local GP referred her to a specialist, and on the day she refused to go. But it's obvious that she has very violent mood swings, and I don't really know how to deal with it. I've tried to avoid contact with her whenever possible, you see, and I... just so I don't set her off accidentally. And there have been so many times in the past, it's just not worth it for me anymore. So I...
And how is this person related to you?
Sibling.
Oh, it's a sibling. So it's very close to your heart.
Yeah.
That's even more dicey, right? How does he sit this person down, Lee J, and convince her? It's almost like an intervention, isn't it, to say...
Yeah.
You need to go to that specialist. You need some help. You're loony. No, you can't say that.
Well, Philip, the first thing that I'm hearing is you're saying you try and stay away from her as much as you can.
Mm.
Have you explained to her why you're doing this?
I think she knows already, but I haven't been that direct with her because I fear the worst and upsetting her. And I've been told by other people not to give her any chance to react in such a way. So it's I'm sort of caught in the middle of being told to avoid things, but, you know, being on the front end receiving things anyway when they happen.
Yeah, yeah.
Lee J, this is kind of a... I would think that this is a very common phenomenon, that the way we deal with something upsetting is to try and ignore it. And what happens when we do that?
Well, when we ignore and when we sidestep issues like this, what can happen is people assume the worst, number one. Number two, it leaves a vacuum. Short of us giving them the reason, it leaves a vacuum where they can make their own stuff up. Now, Philip, this I think you said it was a she, so the sister of yours, she seems to be in denial or not wanting to know about her issues. And so you're keeping away from her. She's going to blame that on you or on circumstances or on anything else under the sun other than her issues getting in the way, because she doesn't want to face her issues. She's not curious about them. She's not. She doesn't want to know what they're about. She didn't go finish up with a specialist.
And she's probably afraid, I would think. Yeah. She knows something's wrong.
Yeah. So several things you can do. And the first is address what Diane just spoke about. Address her fear and say, look, I know what you're going through must be scary. And she may explode and say, what are you talking about when I'm going through and all
that?
You know, but you can say, I know you. I've known you all my life. I know this isn't you, and I know you're not happy when you're being like this, and I want to do whatever I can to support you, to love you, and to help you in any way that I can, because I want to see you happy again. I want to see you smiling. What I want for you is this, and it's because it affects me in trying to be a loving relative of yours that I need to do what I can to make that better for me too. So it doesn't feel like you're just trying to fix her. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, yes.
All right.
And it also sounds like you're a calm person, Philip, and that you're frightened of being pulled into her drama.
Oh, yes. No, it gets stressful at times, I'm afraid.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure.
And that kind of chaos is just not you and doesn't suit you, and you don't even know how to comport yourself within that.
No.
So you pull away.
Yes.
Which means that then it's something that's on your mind every day, and it should be addressed.
And here's what happens. As you pull away, Philip, it becomes so uncomfortable for you to have to pull away from her that it creates more stress for you. And Buddy Hackett used to do a thing. An old American comedian used to say, while you're carrying a grudge, the other guy is out dancing. And here you are carrying all the burden of this. And she's out just living her life, doing what she does and, you know, going through her mood swings or whatever. And you're the one walking around carrying all of this.
Yes, right. Yeah.
So this is why you have to talk to her. And when you do, you've got to make her know that it's coming from a place of love and compassion, that you're really interested in being there for her. And Diane?
Yeah, I want to say, too, that I think you better be prepared that she's not going to respond well immediately. You may need to spend an hour or two and really have a crying fest with her to get her over that wall that she has so obviously built up. And maybe just grabbing her and hugging her and say, I want my sister back. I want my happy-go-lucky, when we used to run in the field of flowers in the meadow, sister back. And I want to help you get there, so you have to let me in.
I want that kind of sister, too.
Yeah. But when you finally reach a breakthrough, I just recently had a big sit-down, talk-down, come-to-Jesus sort of talk with a family member. And it was very, very tense the first 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. And then we both started bawling like babies. Aww. And then it ended in hugging and better communication, better understanding. So I would just say, don't let the first 20 minutes scare you away, Philip.
Yes, agreed.
And Philip,
I read Kevin Smith's blog, and he wrote several times about something which he called My Shadow, which was his friend Jay's battle with drugs and his constant going in and out of drug rehab over a series of years and years and years, and how long it took to finally get him sober and off the heroin or whatever.
Oh, wow.
I'm just envisioning the same uphill battle now.
And, you know, I'm sure that there are places that you can seek out, Philip, where you can sit in a small group with six or eight other people who are going through the same thing you are. You're not the only one who's dealing with a family member with a personality disorder like this.
Yes.
And having the support of other people going through it will help you get great ideas for how to help her cope, but also how to deal with it day in and day out. So
yes.
You might want to seek out some of that. But getting back to the conversation, I would just add on to what Diane was saying by saying, if she rages, if she goes off and screams and yells and doesn't let you have the rest of the conversation with her, that doesn't mean that she didn't hear you. It just means that what you said was frightening to her, and she needs to push you away so she can internalize it and digest it a little bit, and you may have to just come back another time and make another approach.
Right, okay.
Hey, Philip, good luck. This is going to be a tough one. Good luck. Stay in touch with us, will you?
I will, yes, via the email and everything.
Thank you so much.
Right. Well, thank you very much, everyone. It's been very helpful, and I'll give it my best.
All right. Be well.
Good luck to you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks
Boy, that was an interesting call.
Yeah.
If you have a problem with a family member, a coworker, a neighbor, next-door neighbor, you want to talk it over, give us a call at 888-531-7171. Any time of the week, you can leave us a voicemail if you'd like, 888-531-7171, or email us at talkitover@gmail.com.
And you don't have to be from London.
No, but that was nice to get.
It sure was.
It helps when we
Matt,
get to hear
Matt,
that
Matt, I like the way you said on our international call-in line. Well, you know, we are streaming live over the internet, so you can always listen to us.
And they do.
You know, there was something else in the news that caught my attention because I happen to know this person. He's an anchorman from Philadelphia. Well, I should say ex-anchorman from Philadelphia. Is a guy named Larry Menti. He has been indicted for hacking into his co-anchor, this woman's computer. And he hacked in like 530 times. And reportedly, as the story goes, he learned intimate details and then he passed them on to gossip reporters who then printed it.
Nice.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, 500 little snippets he learned about her. She got fired. And then he got fired.
Why did
she
get fired?
Because she called in the FBI. And the FBI took all the computers away from his home and the office. And now he's been indicted.
Okay, but what was she up to that he posted that was so incriminating of her?
Well, ooh la la. Are you ready for this?
I really am.
I forget that. Talk about your gossip. But gather round, friends. I forget the NFL player's name, but apparently she was smitten with an NFL player, and so she was sending him emails of her, photographs of her in a bikini.
Awesome.
And they were intercepted by this player's wife, and the wife started emailing. And so this is among what he found. She also had another hip-hop DJ, rock and roll somebody boyfriend, and she came to New York for a weekend and got in a fight, a street fight, with a cop.
Whoa.
This is worse than like a 21-year-old's Facebook.
It's unbelievable. So anyway, he's learning all these details, and he's leaking it to people. And you want to know why I think he did it?
Why?
Because he made, hold on to your hats here, he made $700,000 a year, and she, as his co-anchor, made $800,000 a year. So I think he was a little jealous is what it is. But now he's facing a felony rap.
They are
children. This is just, they're children.
And they're so caught up in themselves because she's making more than him, and they're both making oodles of money. It doesn't really matter.
And they're both behaving like brats.
Yeah,
and all of the crap that they're up to is just so insidiously destroying them from the inside out. It's just
it is. And it's not that he was snooping or that she had laundry or whatever. The problem is they're both acting in ways that they should be ashamed of. And I assume are ashamed of when they look in the mirror.
I don't think
and
so.
They kept doing it. These people are just compulsive.
Are people like this ever really ashamed, Lee J? They do it.
I think so. I don't think that publicly they're ashamed, but internally they're ashamed. Absolutely.
Well, what's compelling them to behave this way?
Well, when I sit with people like this in mediation, you get these people who are in complete denial and they keep talking about how they didn't do it and it's not their fault and all this other stuff. But when I sit with them one-on-one in a private, quiet room, there are times these people say, I just didn't know how to get out once I was in, or I knew it was wrong as I was doing it. People know what people know right from wrong. And the bottom line is, if you're acting in a way that you can't look in the mirror and be completely comfortable with yourself, then it's your own stuff you've got to worry about, not somebody else's stuff that you're trying to point at.
Yeah,
how many people have arguments with coworkers? And I mean, what if it happens to you and you're arguing with somebody in your office or you have a rivalry and you find out they've been hacking into your computer? Who do you talk it over with? That person, or do you talk it over with the boss or the police?
Everybody. First, you talk it over with that person. You also talk it over with the boss. And if it rises to a level that it's criminal, then you talk to the police or somebody like that, too, because it's your stuff. It's your boundaries. It's your life. Whether somebody comes into your home or somebody sticks a hand inside of your clothing or somebody hacks into your computer, it's all an invasion of your space and your privacy. And all of that is wrong and needs to be called out. Because in a day like today, people think that your computer is impersonal. You know, they wouldn't walk into your bedroom and rifle through your underwear drawer because that would be an invasion. But somehow they don't think it's as egregious to tap into your computer and pull up your emails and snoop around. And the fact is, it is. Just because it's a machine doesn't mean it's not your personal
stuff.
It smells
different, too. Yeah.
And that's for sure. But it's also like your personal mail. You know, it's a felony to go into someone's mailbox and pick up and open up their mail.
And for a reason. It's a felony.
It apparently is a felony to do it here because this man, Larry Menti, is facing felony charges. He could go to prison. Yeah. This pretty boy in prison. Ooh, I just don't even want to think about that.
Wow, he's going to be canoodled.
All right, should we go to the phones?
Okay.
Yes, we've got Tom on the Talk It Over phone lines. Hello, Tom.
Tom.
Hi.
What's going on with you, buddy?
Hey, Tom.
What's going on?
Not a whole lot. I had a question for you guys,
though.
I have an issue.
Yes.
Well, I am trying to enjoy my summer, and my girlfriend of about 9 months is telling me I need to be getting a job and work through the summer, and I'm just trying to relax. And so, I don't know. Hoping you guys can give some input.
All right. Well, when's the last time you had a job?
I've had some part-time jobs throughout college, but it's just sort of been spotty here and there because my parents pay for most of the stuff. So,
are you still in college?
I just graduated, so now it's sort of that interim phase where I have to look for a real job as opposed to the fake ones.
All right, so we're talking about that period in time during which you've just graduated from college. You want to have a nice summer before you think about real life and its impendingness, you know, and
it's
your girlfriend is saying,
doom.
Yeah, well, no, it's just it's scary because you know everyone remembers that moment, whether it was after high school or after college, where real life is glaring at you, and you're saying, who am I? What am I going to be? What am I going to do? And all of that.
And you're about to be shackled to a desk for the next 45 years of your life until they give you a gold watch. Right. It's daunting, isn't it?
And you don't even want to necessarily announce, this is the direction I'm going in, because what if you can't get there and all of that? It's scary.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, all right. Well, Lee J, what do you think?
All right. Well, Tom, first of all, has she told you why she's pressuring you to get a job?
Well, she just thinks it's important to have a large savings and something to fall back on, that kind of thing.
Okay. And she's probably not wrong, right?
Yeah, to an extent, yeah.
All right. And why is this important to her?
Why is what important?
That you get a job. Why is
and have a large savings
account.
Why
is it so important to her that she's bugging you?
I think she's just kind of paranoid. I mean, she's just looking at the country and sort of the problems we're facing. Actually, you know, the world. And so it's just sort of like, let's try and be more safe than sorry. And, you know, I'm sort of doing the same thing, but I'm taking the other approach where as opposed to, I don't want to save per se, I want to enjoy the moment, at least these couple of moments, these couple of months, you know.
And what do you do with your day?
Loaf, mainly. Most loafing, pretty much. Wake up, loaf, eat some lunch.
So Tom, this is so ripe for a great conversation with her because you've been seeing this woman 9 months. So I assume you're fairly serious about her.
Yeah.
Okay. And you're calling because you'd rather discuss this with us and then with her than break up with her, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So let's talk about your future with her. Let's just project out for a minute. And let's say that you're with this woman for a very long time, or let's say you get engaged and married one day or something like that. This conversation that you can have with her right now is the perfect foundation, almost like a premarital conversation, that'll tell you a lot about whether you're right for each other. And what I'm talking about is, the issue isn't do you get a job or do you not get a job? That's just the way it's manifesting itself. The problem is she thinks you have different values than she does. She thinks that you don't care about the future and having savings and all of that. And that, so she's testing you. She's pushing you to say, don't you care about this? Why don't you go get a job? And you're saying what you've said to us, this is kind of daunting. It's a long way off. And I really just need to chill for a minute after college and take some time off. But here's what I'm thinking. So the conversation to have with her, the way to talk this over with her, is to sit down and say, let's talk about this in the context of our whole lives. First, you talk to me about why you think it's important. Let me tell you why I think it's important to take this time now and regroup before I start looking for a job. And let me give you some assurance about what I'm thinking about the future. I don't know what I want to be for the rest of my life yet, but I'm thinking that I want to do this and that I'm going to pursue it this way. I've already got applications out to some of these places, or, you know, here's the plan I do have.
Well, do you have a plan, Tom? I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt, but that's really important. Do you have a plan, or is she looking at a man that she loves laying on the chaise lounge, loafing, to use your word, without a plan in your head? Tell us just quickly, what is it that you want to do?
Pretty much my plan is to relax now, get in contact with some of my professors, make sure I have some good references. That was the extent of my sort of future looking, is to sort of make sure I have the foundation I think I have from college. And then in a couple months, when my lease is up, then we were planning on actually moving in together up north, and then we can be full on going for the job with the career.
I guess what I'm asking, do you know the kind of job you want to get, and do you have a plan to get there? Because maybe it's not just that she wants you to save a big fat pile of money. She wants to know the direction in which your life is going, because it sounds to me like she's trying to make a decision. Is this a guy I want to stay with for the rest of my life or not?
And Tom, this is more than just the job. This is about, she's about to move in with you. This is a big commitment for her.
Yeah.
And she wants to make sure that you're not a loafer on the sofa all the time, and that you really do have something you want to do with your life. And let me just mention to you as an aside, getting these references from your instructors is great, and do it now before they have next semester's kids in and they, you know, forget who's who.
Yeah.
But you probably do need more of a plan than just getting some references and tucking them under your arm and going up north to a new area where you don't really, do you have contacts up there? Do you have people who can help you get a foot in the door?
Nope, not really.
Okay, so you may want to start laying some groundwork now, and letting people know, I'll be coming up there in September or whatever, but Diane's right. You've got to demonstrate to her that you have a plan, or build a plan with her. But she's concerned. I mean, if you look at this through her eyes, she's saying, "I'm about to move to another part of the state, another part of the world with this guy, and move in with him. How do I know he's going to be able to pay the rent, and I'm not going to end up supporting him?" So you've got to give her some assurance, because you and I know that's not the case. So you've got to give her that assurance that you have a plan, or build a plan with her. Doesn't mean you have to blow away your summer.
But it does mean I have to be proactive, at least somewhat. I get what you're saying.
Let me recommend something. I work with kids, and what I tell them is, I don't care what you do, do something. Nothing feels horrible at the end of the day. I know you think that you want a loaf, but I don't think that it's a very, very rewarding feeling at the end of the day to know that you've spent the day doing absolutely nothing. And I don't care if you get an internship, or if you volunteer, or if you make a dime, I want you to do something, because that will go towards, if you're going to move up north, then you can say, this is what I did. I went and read to old people at a home. I went and I served food somewhere. I interned at the newspaper. I don't care what you do. Do something. And I don't care if you only do it 4 hours a week. Do something. Yeah, have a great summer. But do something so that you have something to bring with you up north to say, I did this.
Because, Tom, I hire a lot of people who are fresh out of college, and I interview a lot of them. And my first question for you would be, all right, you graduated back in June. What have you been doing for the last 3 months?
Exactly.
And if you said to me, you've been loafing, I would probably say, hey, really nice to meet you, but I got four people in the other room who are doing internships and doing this and doing that, and are go-getters demonstrably. And so my concern for you is that it's not going to be like flipping a switch when you get up there where you just get a job. you're going to have to demonstrate to employers as well as to your girlfriend that you've got a plan.
Yeah.
So what are you going to do now?
Well, pretty much motivate myself and get going. I like a lot of what you guys have said, and it's sort of, you know, shined a new light on it, so to speak. So.
Okay, yeah. Very, very good. I hope so, because you sound
lots
like
of
really,
luck, Tom.
Really
but
awesome
I think
kid.
Louise's advice is the very best. Do something, because as Lee J said, if you tell your prospective employer, "Oh, what have I been doing for the last 3 or 4 months? Loafing? Not gonna fly." Anyway,
not a good resume word.
Yeah, loafing.
But first, have a good conversation with the girlfriend, Tom.
Yes.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for the help.
All right. Thanks for calling. Bye bye.
All right. Bye bye.
Yeah, note to self, do not use loafing. Okay. Anyway, you know, I almost wanted to shake the kid as a mother, the mother on this panel here. You know, sometimes they just say, well, you know, don't I deserve to rest? Well, yeah, you do. But you also have just gotten a very expensive education, and you need to have some sort of plan in your life.
Yeah.
And if he's got another person he wants to live his life with, he owes it to that person to say, let's us make some goals together. It's so hard to deal with family members, isn't it? And potential family members, I guess, in this case.
Well, you know, it's a college romance is one thing, but women, you know, I've read all kinds of studies that women, it sounds callous, but they're looking for providers. They're sort of trying to carve out a little nest where they can raise youngins. And if he's not going to be a provider, and for me, it's not even providing, because, you know, women today are very capable of providing for ourselves. It's You want to be with someone that you have respect for, and I certainly don't want somebody walking through the living room and saying to me, I can't believe you TiVo'd The Bachelor and you're laying there watching it, but I earn my bachelor time.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Yeah, we all want to be able to loaf a little bit, but you've got to do something. It only feels good if you've worked really hard and earned it.
Now, the issue also isn't black or white. He wants to do absolutely nothing. It doesn't mean he's got to do the opposite and go, you know, work as like a crazy person. You can take a part-time job or a full-time job.
Or an internship and start small.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
And still have your nights and your weekends and a couple of days a week even to use for this transition time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he can still go to the beach and have barbecues with friends and have a good time. It's not like his life has to end because he's going to get a part-time job or internship.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So somewhere in between.
Louise, before we actually hit the air, you were talking about how difficult it was to communicate with someone who is in your life and how toxic the conversations become. And I think sometimes people just worry that once they enter into a conversation that could get sticky, you know, what are your plans? Gee, I don't have any, that they just avoid it altogether.
I think I'm pretty good at dealing with people, and I almost always feel like I can set it up in such a way that everybody feels safe in the conversation, because I think safety is huge when you're having these types of conversations. But I do have one family member that we're sort of at an impasse, and I found it's easier to have as little dealings with her as possible. And I'm wondering, you know, because every time I try to play out the conversation in my head, within a couple of sentences in my head, it gets to where I'm being yelled at, or my words are being twisted and I'm getting frustrated, you know, because that's
so you anticipate a bad conversation, so you don't even go into the conversation.
Yes, because that's how all of our conversations have been.
You go into it flinching.
Yeah, she's just one of those people that will that's extremely judgmental. I always feel that I'm on watch and that everything that I've done is the wrong thing and the wrong way. You know, I even tried to compose my thoughts and put them in an email, and she says to me, "I don't do email."
Oh, man.
So we're on the phone, and I'm saying, well, I'd love for you to read the email and then call me, and we'll talk about what's in the email. And she says, you know, "I don't do email," so... Everything has to be her way. So I said, okay, we can start this conversation, but if it begins to get uncomfortable, I'm going to be hanging up. Don't think I'm hanging up on you, but I don't want to have this conversation with you over the phone.
Yeah.
And be interrupted and feel attacked. So if it gets uncomfortable, I'm going to be hanging up. And within three sentences, it got uncomfortable. And I said, okay, I'm going to be hanging up. Please go read the email.
So, Wizzy, let me ask,
how do you talk to a member
first of all,
like that?
Have you met with her face-to-face? Because I heard you say on the telephone it's difficult and she doesn't do email. But have you thought about sitting across from her? How does that go?
The last time we sat across from each other was with a professional mediator. And when things left off, I thought we were good. And we told each other that we loved each other. This is a family member. And that I had been in business with. And after that, I got a flurry of emails from her trying to readjust what the mediator had agreed upon.
Oh, so she does do email when it suits her.
Interesting. Mm. Anyway, I do love her and she is a family member, but it's easier for me right now to just not have dealings with her. And it bothers me.
Yeah. When you're trying to talk to somebody who is so busy barreling over you while you're trying to say your message to them, sometimes, and I know on the show we usually tell people don't email because you lose all the emotional context and you lose the facial expressions and you lose the body language and all the things that we take information from. But sometimes you have to put the words in front of them. And I like the way you said, look, I need to hang up now. Go read the email. The piece I would add to that to make it more clear for her is, right now I'm having trouble talking to you about this. Mm-hmm. I was pretty clear when I put it in the email, so I was able to say it the way I wanted to say it. It might be helpful, and she's probably yelling over you while you're trying to do this, but it really might be helpful if you read that, because I just don't feel like I'm able to have you hear me right now, which is a whole lot better than you're not listening, or you know.
Right.
Are there some people though, Lee J, that you just can't talk it over with?
I mean
to say, when you sit down with like a cranky boss or a cranky neighbor, mm-hmm. and you try to explain your feelings, and they're already picking apart what you say. I mean, is there some ratio of failure? I guess is what I'm asking.
Well, yes, there's a ratio of failure, but no, I don't believe there are people you can't talk it over with. What I believe is, there are circumstances where you can't talk over. Sometimes there's a time constraint and you just, you know, the boss is in a hurry and doesn't have time to listen to you just then. So what you do is you say, can I schedule with you 20 minutes at some point today or tomorrow that we can sit down and have this conversation?
Okay,
so circumstance gets in the way, which triggers personalities more than straight personality. Almost any personality will come around if you're able to sit with them long enough to work through it. And that's what I find in the mediations. You know, people say to me, how come some mediations get done in 3 hours and some cases that are equally as complex when they walk in the door take until 1 o'clock in the morning? And the reason is because some people take until 1 o'clock in the morning to let you in to have a conversation that's meaningful to help resolve the conflict. And this relative of Louise's sounds like one of those people that you really need to carve out a 3-hour chunk of time to go sit with her, let her vent, let her get it all out of her system. And eventually, because Wheezy is so good and so patient and like you said earlier, setting it up so safely to have this conversation, you'll get through to her, just not in a 15-minute block of time.
But I don't feel safe.
Then you need to tell her that.
And I don't know, if you need a mediator to deal with a relative, an official professional mediator to deal with a relative, I'd say maybe that's a relative you ought to avoid.
Well, I think that's what Wheezy's saying, is she doesn't really want to avoid her, even though she has been. And the mediator wasn't just to help them have a conversation. This was about a contract
right. That
needed legal interpretation, mm-hmm. and they had different perspectives on what it meant, and they wanted the mediator to help them. But
I see.
Yeah, so there was a good call for it, I think, in that situation. But clearly, that's a situation that could use some intervention.
Yeah.
And
Wheezy, lots of luck on that one, Louise.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you might think about if there's a family member, somebody who knows you both and is comfortable with both of you, who would come along?
And my co-host on this show.
Yeah, there you go. What, are you busy next week,
Lee J? we'll have to talk off the air. But, you know, everyone who's listening, you're not going to have a professional mediator sitting next to you. You don't need one. What you need is somebody else to sit along with you to help triangulate the energy so that she can't just go off at you, but there's somebody else there, mm-hmm. witnessing it, so she's going to act more appropriately in front of this other person.
I would do that.
Yeah.
I would do that.
And the other good clue is just go walk around the block with her. People who have that much energy, they keep interrupting you and they keep barreling over what you're saying. Take them for a walk around the block so that you're shoulder to shoulder, facing the same direction rather than sitting across the table so that they're just talking at you like you're their adversary all the time.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, slip a little Valium in their coffee.
There you go. Should we go to the phones?
Let's go to the phones.
All right.
Okay, we've got Hannah on the phone. Hello, Hannah.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, Hannah.
Hi, Hannah.
Hi.
How can we help? What's happening?
Okay, so I have a friend, and she's been my best friend for years, and she just got out of a relationship that she was in. It was a serious relationship, but it was really, really rocky. It was really, really up and down. They always had really bad fights and broke up and got back together, but it finally just ended a couple of days ago, and they were supposed to move in together in the beginning of September, but now she's sort of without a home, without a boyfriend. She's just finishing up an internship, and she doesn't really know where to go from here, and she's my best friend. I really want to tell her something inspiring, but she's an incredibly smart girl in an incredibly unfortunate position.
So she doesn't have a place to live right now, is that it? Or
well,
is she devastated
by
the
break? Right now she doesn't have a place to live. Her lease, I think, ends before her internship ends, but then she's also looking for a job, and also she's pretty distraught because of her relationship ending.
So it's
does she want to come and live with you? Is that it, Hannah?
No. Because she's not she's living in Davis, and I'm not living there. But she
I
just,
see. So you just need to have some words of wisdom to give to her to tell her it's a bad patch, but things will get better.
Basically, yeah.
Well, Lee J, that sounds like your bailiwick.
A bad patch, but things will get better. Tell me a little bit more, Hannah. Tell me some more detail.
Okay. Like about her relationship or?
Well, about your concern for her.
Well, she's always had just a really she's always had a strong head on her shoulders, but I think that this relationship was really hard for her because she's a very stable person, and the person she was in a relationship with was just very unstable.
Did she know that you were disapproving, sort of, or not feeling like this was the best person? Was she aware of that? Are you reluctant to say things that would sound like "I told you so" or any of that kind of type of message?
Kind of, but I met him after not meeting him for a really long time and pretty much just hearing a lot of bad things about him. And I actually met him right after they had a huge fight when I went to visit her. And I actually really liked him. And then I was like, wow, you know, I can see sort of why you're in this situation because he seems like a really great guy. He just seems a little bit unstable and doesn't really know how to handle a relationship very well. I mean, he's 27 years old and he, you know, still acts like a child.
Mm-hmm.
So, not that bad.
So
I don't know. and she's younger. She's 22. So it's an interesting. She feels like she lost, you know, somebody that, you know, was definitely potential seriousness because she was going to move in with him.
Mm-hmm. So when you're on the phone with her, you're just saying to us, what do I say? Do I just act like nothing happened? Do I say, hey, you know, it's for the best?
You're better off without him.
I mean, is that what you're wondering is how do you interact with her now that this kind of unfortunate stuff?
Yeah, basically. I mean, she called me yesterday and it's hard to know exactly what to say to her right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the best advice I ever got about this, I got from my very best friend when I went through a breakup that was like a first love, broke my heart. I was about 23. And my best friend wrote me a letter. And he said, and I saw him every day. You know, and we'd go out and have a beer or whatever. He gave me this letter and it said, being in a relationship is like reading a great book. When you first start out, you're curious about the characters, you're getting into it, you're getting to know them, then there's some rough spots, then you can't put it down, and you become like addicted to it, and you have to see what's happening to your characters every day and all of that, and then it ends.
Right.
And maybe what you can help her with, Hannah, is to understand that in all of our lives, we have all of these relationships when we're dating, and all these people that we get close to, and we lose most of them along the way. The fact is, only one lasts forever.
Right.
All the others, all of them, end. It's set up with really bad odds, if you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe you can help her appreciate that this was like a great book that she just finished, and you're sad that it's over, and you wish that it could keep going on, but it deserves the place of a good book on a shelf where every now and then you can go back and pull it down and flip through the pages and remember some of it, and then put it back on the shelf where it belongs.
And you get her library card. So she can go check
That was really sweet. Yeah. I really like that analogy. That
That was really good. That was great.
You know, sometimes when relationships end, we kind of freak out, but we don't have to, because the truth is almost all of them do, and it's natural.
Yeah.
And it's just a growing experience, and she's a better person for it. She learned a lot at 22 about doing relationships, including that she was more mature than this guy who was 27.
And what I have found to be true with relationships is that each of the ones that doesn't work out is our teacher. It teaches us what we do need in a relationship. And it's our informer, and it's our friend. A failed relationship
teaches you what you don't want.
Just like failing at anything, failing is learning. It's not failure. It's just learning. And it's teaching her. And I think what Lijay just said is an amazing piece of advice from friend to friend, because, you know, we live in a world with cell phones and emails and instant communication. If you take the time to write her a letter and send it to her, it will be something that she will hold throughout her life.
And, you know, the other piece of advice that I love is one of my all-time favorite songs is a Garth Brooks song called Unanswered Prayers. And it says, some of God's greatest gifts are unanswered prayers. Those things that you think at this point in your life that you want more than anything end up being things that weren't right for you. And we don't know it because we don't have the perspective. We are sitting here brokenhearted at the end of this relationship, focused on what we just lost. But the truth is, there's a bigger plan, and the right person just hasn't come along yet, and this person was sent to her for a reason.
God bless the broken road that led me straight to you. There is a lot of wisdom in country music.
Yeehaw! Well, there is a lot of wisdom in country music.
Well, Hannah, you're a very, very good friend, and your friend is lucky to have you, and I know that when you put this all down, you'll do the right thing.
Thank you.
Thank you so much
Thanks for calling, Hannah.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
I'm going to remember what you said about the book, reading a book. Hey, if you want to give us a call and tell us one of your personal conflicts or wonder how to talk it over with somebody, it's 888-531-7171, 888-531-7171, or just drop us an email at talkitover@gmail.com. In fact, we have an email that I wanted to get to tonight. It's from Maureen in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I think a lot of people might be in this position. My brother's teenage son is gay, she writes. I'm not sure that he and his wife realize it, but I do because I spotted my nephew at the mall with his friend, quote unquote, and it was clear to me. He spoke to me later about the encounter and left no doubt in my mind. My question is it my place to talk it over with my brother, or do I leave that up to my nephew? He's so shy. I don't think my brother will take it very well, and I think maybe I could help smooth the way.
It is never your place, Maureen, to talk this over with your brother, because the fact that you observed it and that you've come to a conclusion about it is great for you.
But for the kid.
But what if you're wrong, number one? And number two, what if you out the kid who's not ready yet emotionally for what his parents' reaction is going to be? The best thing you can do, Maureen, is be a great aunt to your nephew, mm-hmm. because that's what he needs now more than anything.
Absolutely.
The aunt and the uncle and the cousins are always the best arm's length people to talk to, because your parents are there to discipline you. Your grandparents are going to give you candy. But your aunt and your uncle are the other grown-ups that you can talk to trustingly and privately. And it might take your nephew 2, 3, 4 conversations with you, Maureen, to figure out how to tell his parents and all of that. Figure out what he wants to say and come to some conclusions himself that maybe he's not clear on. So to the extent that you can help him feel comfortable and support him as an aunt, That's the best value you can be.
These are what I call our most uncomplicated relationships. It's just pure love. It's not the complication of being a parent or being responsible for the person. It's just pure love. And when that kid knows that you're cool with him being who he is, it will give him the strength and the confidence to come out to his parents when and if he's ready.
Yeah. And let me just say, my wife and I have not been blessed with children, and that wasn't a choice that we made. But I've got nieces and nephews who I adore. Those relationships are precious to me, and I can tell by the way they all treat me that my relationship with them is precious too. And they do come and talk to me about things, some awkward, some silly, you know, but things that they just want another adult to talk about, to talk to these things about, somebody they trust
that
who's close to them.
That they don't want their parents,
exactly,
right.
Exactly. Yeah. So Maureen, you've got a great opportunity here to play a really important role in your nephew's life that nobody else is positioned to play but you.
Yeah, but don't go talking to your brother. I think we all agree on that. It's not your business. Well, here's another email. This is from Elizabeth in Santa Maria, California. My husband and I suspect that his former business partner is a tax cheat. Ooh, interesting. Former business partner is a tax cheat. He tried to do some dishonest things while in business with my husband, so we got out of the partnership. But we share a bookkeeper with this guy, and we have every reason to believe that he is cheating the government by saying he's still in business with us and taking deductions he shouldn't take. Do we try to talk it over with him, or do we talk it over with a local IRS office to protect ourselves? Well, I guess we're not attorneys or tax experts here, but what should they do?
I don't know enough about tax law to know what the right thing to do here is.
Well, first of all, it's the same answer as the last one. To a certain extent, it's not his business. I mean, I love that he's trying to be a good Samaritan and that he has concerns that his partner, his former partner, may try to pull him in. In reading the email, the way Diane read it, it sounds to me like a lot of speculation. He sort of hinted, we have reason to believe, and he tried to do some dishonest things. It sounds like he didn't actually, he just tried to.
And maybe there's just bad blood there, and there isn't anything really wrong at all.
Yeah, and it's another one of the situations where he's busy looking over the fence at what's going on in the yard next door to him with his former partner's life and business and all of that, and it's not his business. I mean, I appreciate that he doesn't want to get dragged into something. The best thing he can do is build a 12-foot wall between them, making sure he has all the right documentation to close down the partnership and that he's filing his own taxes properly and that he's got the defenses. If the IRS knocks on his door and says, wait a minute, you know, are you in business with this guy? He can say, no, here's the letter or the email or the documents where we folded down the corporation or the partnership. And this is the date that we did it. And you can see my tax returns. I've been filing, showing that we're not in business together as of that date, and they'll leave him alone. So he's got to,
you know, That's really good advice, to keep the documentation. I'll tell you a little secret. My husband and I got a letter from the IRS, 3 weeks ago, saying we owed $14,000. And it was like, what? $14,000? We looked into it. It had to do with an advance I got for a book I wrote. And the book came out late one year, and the advance came to me that year, but we didn't get the paperwork from my agent till the next year. So that's what caused the confusion, but I saved the documents and phew, we don't owe $14,000.
Wow.
That's just it. If you're doing everything right, you have nothing to worry about. And yeah. You know, it's funny because I called the last emailer a he one time and I realized I had just mediated a case over the last month between two partners where one was doing just this. I mean, this email is just spooky because, and it happens, but one partner actually was stealing from the other partner and was taking cash out of the company and not reporting it. And all this stuff was going on. And the innocent partner, the more innocent partner, because they were both kind of taking some cash out of the company, the more innocent partner was concerned that the other partner was going to drag him through the mud and wanted to go back and file amended tax returns. And the sneaky partner didn't want to do that. So this happens frequently. You got to be really careful who you're in business with, and you got to make sure you have a really good bookkeeper who's going to bring any irregularity to your attention. That's critical.
Yeah. Excellent. Yeah. And you know what? The basic, I think, best advice that both of you guys are given here is don't stick your nose where it doesn't belong, because it could just come back to bite you.
Yeah. I mean, all Elizabeth can do is make sure that her house is in order, her paperwork is in order, and that she's doing everything right. But there's a point where every minute she spends worrying about what her ex-partner is doing is keeping her from being successful in her next venture.
Right. One more email. If we hurry, we can get it in. This is from Terry in Enid, Oklahoma. I'm ashamed to say that my 95-year-old grandmother from North Dakota uses the N-word. I know it sounds kind of silly to say, but she really doesn't know any better. She doesn't even realize what politically correct means. My real problem is my children, 4 and 6 years old, who are now starting to ask what that word is that great-grandma is using. I need to know how to talk this over, she writes, and with who?
Boy, great question. The first conversation has to be with grandmother, and it has to be a Terry says she doesn't even know what politically correct means. The first thing that Terry's got to do is sit down and bring this woman into the 21st century gradually and gently and without judgment and just say, help her understand. We don't use that word anymore. It's considered a bad or a hateful word. And not only that, the kids are starting to ask about it, my grandkids. And we've got to have a conversation with the kids about why we don't, you know, that's a bad word, just like all the other naughty words that they hear as they make their way around the planet. Mm-hmm. It's scarier that they're hearing it from the great-grandmother.
You know what? It's okay. It's something we can all remember the first time we were told that's a bad word. It's a hurtful word. Yeah. It's a hateful word. Don't use it. I can remember being told that. I don't think I heard it in my own household, but I must have heard it somewhere because I can remember being mm-hmm. told that, and I have never used the word. Kids are going to hear all kinds of words. I remember my nephew, he was told by somebody not to use the word stupid because I was once walking with him and I said, oh, that's just, you know, that's stupid dog, because the dog would scare him when we walked by and the dog would bark. And I said, well, that's stupid dog, like trying to get him to not be afraid of the dog.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, don't use that word. So he was about 3. Someone had told him that was an ugly word.
That's very cute.
So they pick up on it. Just tell them that's an ugly word. It's a hurtful word. Don't use it. I don't think you're going to retrain grandma. But, you know, you can tell the kids that, you know, she doesn't know because she was raised in a different time, but we no longer use that word.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and grandma will get it. I think, 95? You know, come on. She may be 95, but she knows about good manners.
Yeah, she does. She taught them about manners, let's remember. So, yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, and I wouldn't underestimate.
You can try.
Yeah, I wouldn't underestimate
Please don't
her
use
ability.
That word, grandma, you know.
Especially but yeah, you got to explain to her why. You got to give her the reasons.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, here on Talk It Over, and by the way, you can always email us during the week at talkitover@gmail.com. We always begin with something that's been in the news lately. So let's end with something that's been in the news lately. I could not resist this story.
I can hear it in your voice.
A man is arrested in Naples, Florida. He is arrested for stealing money out of a fountain in a mall.
Oh, boy.
He took exactly, are you sitting down? 42 cents.
Nice.
For this, you get arrested. I mean, I don't get how we deal with people these days. I think back to, you know, Sheriff Andy Griffith, when Opie made a mistake, Sheriff Andy or Aunt B sat him down and explained it to him and talked it over and told him what the common sense was. Nowadays, we just arrest people?
Well, you lose how many wishes for 42 cents?
I don't know. Isn't that bizarre that the police department in Naples, Florida, would respond to some security guard who'd taken this guy into custody, and they literally took him down, booked him, mugshotted him, arrested. How much did that cost?
Yeah. You know, a couple of things, though.
A lot more than 42 cents.
On one hand, the police had to back up the security guard who'd taken him into custody. You know, they couldn't just set him free because that wouldn't be supporting the security guard, number one. Number two, boy, taking somebody down and arresting him, my guess is they were just trying to scare him, because I may be digging from my deep bowels of my memory, but I seem to recall one episode where Andy Griffith booked a young kid from the town just to show him that what he did was criminal and that it's, you know, it's scary and he doesn't ever want
to. You're right. How do you remember that?
I don't know.
Because Andy always did the right thing.
Yeah.
It was just common sense. It was just, you know, that's not something you do, and okay, Opie never did it again.
Yeah. Yeah. I think if the police or the mall security guard could sit down and have a conversation with this guy and say, here's why we don't let people do that, and here's what can happen, and here's, you know, if you did it, everybody be in there, and then we'd have people drowning, and, you know, whatever their issues are. But at some point, they got to be able to talk to him. And frankly, the mall security guard probably should have been able to do that without calling the police.
Mm-hmm. But I don't think so that mall security guards are the highest paid or most highly trained employees in America.
Okay, so Weezy's email address for all the mall security guards listening to the show is...
He may not have known exactly what to do or had that in training come up. You know, yeah. What if someone's fishing coins out of the fountain?
Hey, you know, every mall security guard and every policeman should be trained in conflict resolution skills.
Ah, there you go. Well, that's a good note to wrap this up on. I would like to thank engineer Matt Sigmund, producer Trish, Lee J. Berman, Diane Diamond, and of course, webmaster Joe Pierce. All of our callers, thank you so much for being a part of the show. And with that, Talk It Over is over.